Pacific Ocean drank the scarlet sun down to the west. Vermilion red fingers spilled across the greenish cast of the sea, interrupted by curling white waves. Some of them slapped rhythmically against the cargo ship's hull, while others ran to crash against Autarkic only a little farther north. Bridget tried to control the frustration she felt. She stood on the Sloop John B's deck with Kane, Grant, and Domi, with Kane's plans to accompany Ambika still echoing in her ears. Christensen stood at the wheel only a few yards away.
We should go back to Cerberus.
We don't know enough yet, Baptiste.
When is it going to be enough, Kane? When she's holding a knife to your throat? Or maybe when you're bleeding down the front of your shirt?
Kane rubbed the back of his neck and turned away from her anger.
Do you want to leave this half done?
No. I don't want to leave it half done. But getting chilled before we get back to Cerberus is the same as leaving it half done.
Turning back to her, Kane gave her that half-smirk of full wattage confidence that she hated about him and found appealing all at the same time.
I'm not planning on getting chilled, Baptiste, but I would like to look at her setup here. Lakish agrees.
Bridget knew that, too. They'd finished the conversation with Lakish only a few minutes before. The professional, detached part of her that had made such a good archivist agreed with Kane's assessment. They wouldn't be in any more danger from Ambika as part of her flotilla than they would staying in Autarkic.
Tell me how she's different than any of the Barons. You saw those people she chilled in the ambush in Utah.
Yeah, I did. It's a terrible thing to look at, Baptiste. An even more terrible thing to order it to be done, but it was necessary.
You saying that doesn't convince me.
I know, and I'm glad it doesn't. But I recognize that sometimes things like that have to happen in order to cause change. When it comes to changes like this, you need a sinner, not a saint, to get the job done. Lakish recognizes that. It's why he recruited Grant and me.
Bridget turned away from him, unable to continue the argument. Her feelings of dread had grown with the coming of the night. She couldn't make up her mind if it was from the lateness of the hour or knowing they were on the verge of departing.
There she comes!
Domi angled her chin toward the beach. Bridget went back to the railing and watched as Ambika and her entourage reached the beach. With so many men around her dressed in their blue and white uniforms, she was hard to miss. Ambika was met at the pier by a cabin cruiser. Once the woman was aboard, the cabin cruiser heeled around and powered toward the Sloop John B, avoiding the barges and small boats still offloading trade goods in both directions. The cabin cruiser's pilot pulled alongside the cargo ship with expert skill. Ambika stood on the deck, dressed in the Kevlar armor, the sword sheathed down her back. Bridget experienced an instant pang when she saw Kane watching her so intently. Part of her wondered if she'd have objected less to the meeting if Ambika had been a man, or ugly. She didn't like considering that.
Kane.
I'm here.
Take passage on my flagship. It'll offer a better ride, and it's better protected. The waters between Autarkic and my home are often treacherous, with free traders and scavengers.
What about my companions and our vehicle?
Your companions are as welcome as you are. Christensen can bring your vehicle. I've no time to spare to arrange loading it onto one of my craft.
Kane shook his head, and Bridget felt one of the knots in her stomach loosen. Kane out in the field was as alien to her as an Archon. There were things he'd do, risks he'd take, that she clearly didn't agree with. But the percentages bore out his tactics, even the one percenters he and Grant chose to play out rather than let pass. Still, it was impossible to sit by on the sidelines.
I've got other places to be.
Ambika smiled up at him coldly.
I can make the trip worth your time, or I can have your ship sunk after we take the time to transfer the vehicle. Profit or loss, Captain Christensen, your decision.
You don't give a man much choice.
I'm forcing you to make money. Besides, you've never been to my island. You could find whole new worlds open to you. Kane, will you join me now?
Yeah. Give me a minute.
He turned to Bridget.
I don't want to leave the cat unprotected.
So you want me to stay here with it?
Actually, Baptiste, I was going to ask Grant and Domi to stay here with the cat. Unless you don't want to go.
Why do you want me to go?
Kane scowled at her, feeling she should have figured out the answer by herself.
She's a woman.
As you're no doubt very aware.
Yeah, I've noticed. That's why I want you along. Maybe you can get a better read on her than I do.
Meaning I won't be as prone to be distracted and forget why I'm there as you will be.
Damn it, Baptiste. This isn't some kind of competition. If you don't want the job, I'll ask Domi to go.
No. I want to go. I want to see her for myself. Let me get my gear.
They stood on the prow of the Warrior Queen's flagship, a three-masted motor sailor that cleaved the Pacific Ocean and rode like silk on glass.
Is she your woman?
Kane looked at Ambika in surprise.
Baptiste? She's her own woman. She'll be the first to tell you that.
Ambika looked at him, the aqua eyes intent and glinting in the moonlight. Deeper blue now in the shadows the ending day had drawn.
Have you had a relationship in the past? I thought perhaps I sensed something between you.
That was a harder question to answer. Nothing had happened between him and Bridget in this time and place, but there were those memories of past lives to consider. He still remained unclear about those.
No.
It's unusual for me to be wrong about such things.
Kane looked out over the water. The surge of the flagship knifing through the water was heady, almost feeling like he was falling at times. He glanced behind them and saw the other ships sailing along in their wake.
Have you got a woman back where you come from?
Kane was overly aware of how close they stood together. In the chill of the night air rushing by them, he could still feel the woman's body heat.
No.
But you've known women.
Yes.
Many of them?
Why?
She raised an arched brow, obviously irritated that he'd interrupt the flow of questions.
Because I like to get to know people I do business with. It helps me understand what they're thinking, and what they're willing to risk to accomplish the things they set out to do. I think that you're a driven man, Kane. I can see it in your eyes, in the way you hold your head. You let few things stand between you and what you desire.
That's not always a good way to be.
It's the only way to get everything in life that you want. Thinking is good to strategize when events grow cold, but when things are hot, ready to be taken by action, by force, passion is the tool best used.
You give me the impression of someone who thinks things through.
I do, but I won't settle for second best, or anything less than I feel I deserve. I believe you're the same way. The woman, Baptiste, doesn't understand that. She doesn't like me. I can see it in her eyes. It's nothing that's going to stand in the way of us working together. I do business every day with people I don't like.
Like Wei Kiang?
Actually, no. I like Wei Kiang very much. More than that, I respect him. If we weren't in conflict over some of the same territories, maybe we could even enjoy friendship. Believe it or not, we even exchange gifts every now and then.
What kind of gifts?
Wei Kiang collects art objects, especially things from the San Francisco area known as Chinatown. Paintings, sculpture, jewelry.
San Francisco? Wasn't that a ville in California?
Actually, it was one of the biggest. For a long time, it lay at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, nearly 200 feet down. When the Western Isles were reformed almost 100 years ago, the area came closer to the surface. Now it lies only 50 or 60 feet down. Scavengers discovered it nearly 30 years ago and began harvesting salvageable items from it. Now I supply crews that work that area.
And in the meantime, you're working on taking over the mining operations in the Utah territories. You've got the manpower to do that?
I'm doing it.
Baron Kobold isn't going to sit back and let it happen.
No, and I'm not going to walk away either.
Kane felt himself drawn to her vision and fire. She was so many things that Bridget wasn't. The realization that he'd compared the two women shocked him and triggered a spark of anger deep within him. Bridget didn't deserve that, and the fact that he'd compared them said a lot about how he felt about Bridget.
I was born to conquer, Kane. Have you heard of the totality concept?
Yeah.
My spies in Cobaltville have heard rumors that your discovery of some hidden information held by the Barons led to the issuing of a termination warrant on you. You've also heard of Over Project Excalibur in the totality concept?
They were interested in gene manipulation.
I, too, am a product of gene manipulation. My father was a man named Will Longley. He was part of Mission Invictus and believed that the best way to effect a lasting change was to adjust the basic human genes, building toward a more perfect product.
He believed he was close to perfect himself?
My father was a great man, but he didn't have an ego like that. He used the sperm and eggs of the most perfect physical and mental specimens he could find. Rhodes Scholars, Olympic champions. That was how the administrative staff of Excalibur found out what he was doing. They had more people under their control than my father expected. He was forced into hiding, fleeing for his life, ostracized from every person he'd once counted as a friend.
Kane listened to the woman's words, wondering why she was being so open with him. She had to have a reason.
Fortunately, my father had prepared. He had a vault set up with the hibernation chamber high in the Rocky Mountains, chancing that he'd survive the coming nuke cost. He'd kept his files duplicated there. He worked up until the end of the world, perfecting all his experiments. When the world died, he climbed into the hibernation chamber.
Below, one of the sailors drifted close to Bridget. The sight of the man talking to her irritated Kane. He forced himself to look away and concentrate on Ambika's words.
52 years ago, the hibernation chamber opened. The vault he'd set up suffered some damage and disrepair, but he picked up where he'd left off with his research. After a considerable number of failures, I was born.
You look to be about 26 or 27. You've raised an army and an empire in a pretty short amount of time.
I started when I was 14.
At 14?
When did you start serving with the magistrates?
I was 16.
I was only 2 years your junior.
But I was joining a unit, being a follower, not a leader.
I was bred to lead. And by 14, I had attained my full growth. I looked then almost as you see me now.
It takes more than ability and willingness to lead people.
You're wondering what I did with those who thought they could lead instead of me?
I don't figure a group would let a 14-year-old girl step in and start telling them what to do.
They didn't. I chilled the ones who tried that. Immediately. After the first few, they fell in line. My father trained me to kill, and when he'd taught me all he knew, he brought warriors in from outlying vills. They trained me further. The rest, I've taught myself, or learned from the men I've fought.
Kane examined her more closely. Her skin tone was flawless. The absence of scars suddenly struck him.
You've never been wounded?
I've been wounded several times, Kane. Nearly chilled a half a dozen others. The closest I ever got to death was when a portion of my skull was blown away. That was 3 years ago, part of an assassination attempt by a group of organized free traders who objected to my taking over their area. When I recovered, I tracked each one of them down and chilled them with my own hands.
Kane peered at her head. Only unblemished skin met his gaze.
You don't believe me?
I don't see how I can. I've never seen anyone survive the kind of injury you're talking about. And there's no scar, no sign of such a wound existing.
There never is. As I told you, my father's plans for me were perfection. I was designed to be the ultimate survivor.
Then why didn't he make more of you?
Because only one queen bee can exist in a hive. If there had been another, we would have fought until one of us chilled the other. He birthed me to bring some order to what was left in this world.
Do you think you can do that?
It's not a matter of thinking. It's a matter of doing. I will accomplish those objectives. Baron Cobalt will be the first to go. Then I'll systematically seize and control the rest of the Outlands until I've hunted them all down.
What about the people who live in the Vills?
When the time comes, they'll be given their choice whether to serve me or serve the Barons.
Kane was getting increasingly uncomfortable with the conversation. Even Lakesh, in all his grandiose plans and counterplans, had never talked of becoming a ruler. Lakesh had only talked of freeing the people from the yokes of the Barons, without resorting to civil war.
You want everyone to follow you?
Leadership ultimately falls into the hands of one. Power always resides with one. To believe anything less is foolish. One leader is the natural order of things. One decision, one set of rules, one proper view. Vills are ultimately run by one person. A person who is strong, who is both loved and feared. Coldheart gangs have one leader. Pack animals, bees, and ants.
The logic was flawed, Kane knew, but he wasn't going to debate it.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Do you agree?
I can see your point, but there are some who do just fine when left to their own devices.
You haven't seen enough, Kane.
What haven't I seen?
You grew up in Cobaltville. You didn't see much of what goes on in the Outlands. Cobaltville is established. They make enough food for themselves, but not enough for any others. They kept only those they could feed and care for. Even then, there are the privileged few among them. You were one of the lesser privileged in Cobaltville. But can you imagine living down in the Tartarus pits?
No.
What set those people apart from you? Or anyone else in the Enclaves? Birthright? They were controlling the numbers. The first vill I ran didn't have enough game and harvestable foods around to supply all of the people who had nowhere else to go. The vill broke up, torn by the lack of things I needed to help provide them.
It wasn't your fault.
It was. I made those people believe in me. I should have taken better care of them.
You were young. You didn't know any better.
I trained to take care of those people. I just didn't learn my lessons well. After the Ville fragmented, some of them dead by each other's hands, I made myself a promise that it would never happen again. And it hasn't. My father told me there was a possibility we'd find something out here. When we came, we found the redoubt near where Los Angeles used to be, and we started building there.
And 10 years later, they call it the Isles of the Lioness.
She looked at him, studying him as if to make sure of his emotion. Satisfied, she smiled.
Yes, we continue to grow there.
Wei Kang doesn't know about the redoubt with the functioning gateway.
He knows about them, but he can't get into them.
If your next move is to consolidate a power base in the Utah territories, why not begin here?
It's the iron ore, Kane. It's important to what I have to do. You'll see tomorrow.
Kane nodded, curbing his impatient curiosity. The woman interested him more than ever now, and he was all too aware of the proximity between them. Bridget, he noted, was standing by herself at the railing. Twice he caught her looking up to see him. Both times she'd glanced away hurriedly.
So, how many women have you had, Kane?
I don't know. I didn't count.
And how long has it been since the last one?
A while.
It's been a long time. I can tell.
A little embarrassed, Kane glanced away from her.
I can see your passion burning within you. I arouse you. You can tell me that's not true, but we'll both know you're lying.
Kane chose not to say anything. Her words coiled around him almost like the arms of a lover, having a strong and immediate effect on him. His erection surprised him.
I saw you today when you faced the men out in the street, and when you walked into my suite to face me, and I saw something in you that I've never seen in a man before. You and I have the same effect on each other. You may not have denied your passions in the past, but I have, for almost my whole life, until now.
Kane couldn't believe it. How could anyone so aggressive deny the needs that burned through her body? He knew it wasn't just men who had those needs. Noticing how dry and tight his throat had gotten, Kane tried to think of something to say. He failed. His pulse beat at his temples. She left him without another word. She never even looked back. Kane hung onto the railing for a long time, staring out into the night, trying to regain the calm he needed. Kane rose late the next morning. The past few days of hard travel still wore on him. Kane had looked for Bridget when he'd gone below decks after talking with Ambika, but he'd never found her. After breakfast, he finally spotted Bridget in the prow by herself. She scanned the sea with her binoculars.
Where the hell were you last night, Baptiste?
I could ask you the same question.
I was in cruise quarters.
So was I. It looked like you were going to be getting in late from the looks of things last night.
Nothing happened.
That's not the impression I got.
The hell with your impressions.
I thought those impressions were what I was here for.
You're jumping to conclusions.
Sure I am. Getting interested in that woman, Kane, you're playing with fire.
There's interested, and then there's interested. She says she's the creation of a genetic manipulation experiment who's born to rule. That's what we were talking about. She's been fighting and leading since she was 14, if what she says is true.
She told you she'd been wounded?
Yeah, several times.
I showered with her this morning in the community bath. There were no scars. Her body was perfectly unmarred.
She also told me she had part of her skull blown away at one time. I couldn't see that either.
Do you think she's lying?
Hell, Baptiste, I don't know. We've seen some pretty weird shit in the past. But she seems very driven. I've never met anyone like her.
Bridget peered at him, her eyes narrowed slightly. He couldn't read her expression, but he had the immediate feeling that he'd said something wrong.
No, you probably haven't.
Kane craned his neck and looked up, spotting a bright red wasp shape above him. Bridget trained her field glasses upward.
It's an airwag.
Let me see.
Kane took the field glasses and stared up through the wisps of fog and spotted the airwag. It was long and slender, its delicate fuselage sandwiched between long, wide wings and equally large stabilizers. When it banked, he saw it was prop-driven and carried only one man in an open cockpit. It wasn't big enough to carry passengers. Two other airwags flanked it. Looking at them, he realized they were the same scarlet color as Wei Qiang's ships. The banking aircraft lost altitude deliberately, dropping toward the ship. The airwag fell behind for a time, barely skimming above the surface of the Pacific. The other two airwags maintained their positions overhead. Kane flicked his wrist, popping the sinister into his hand before he thought about it.
It's all right.
Kane glanced over his shoulder and saw Ambika standing there. He hadn't heard her come up, which was unusual with his point man's awareness.
The airwag has to belong to King. He's the only one who has them.
When the airwag drew close, Kane saw that it was actually a pitiful thing, nothing at all like the death birds he'd flown as a magistrate. The fuselage was made of lightweight wood and canvas, heavily coated with the red lacquer to keep it together. The engine didn't sound very powerful at all. A well-thrown rock could probably knock it out of the air.
All it takes is a high-X package set to explode on contact, and they can put this ship down.
Kang wouldn't do that.
You seem awfully sure of yourself.
We've been enemies for a long time. It's the new ones you have to watch out for. Don't know what they'll be capable of.
Kane flicked a glance at Ambika for that, then looked back at the airwag. The spluttering engine droned on, and the airwag caught up with them. When it drew abreast, less than 10 feet out, the pilot threw a cylinder shape toward the deck. Kane stayed locked on his target, nervously waiting. Dynamite sticks held that kind of shape. The cylinder bounced against the deck twice, then started rolling in a half arc back and forth. One of the crewmen ran over to it, pulled a slip of rolled paper from it, then brought the missive to Ambika. The airwag began its slow ascent into the heavens, the motor straining.
How kind of Kang to let me know. Raiders are attacking one of my fuel shipments only a few miles to the west.
Kang keeps scouts in the air?
Not just for scouting, but also to remind people that he has the airwags. As you said, it only takes a high-X package set to explode on contact to take out a ship and her crew. He's ordered it done in the past.
Why not do it now if he's interested in protecting your fuel shipment?
The free traders and raiders have learned that trick. As soon as one of Kang's airwags gets close, they blast them from the skies. It doesn't take much firepower to knock one of the airwags down, and they're time-consuming to construct.
Why would Kang be interested in protecting your shipment?
Because it's going to him.
Ambika ran her hands across her weapons, mentally taking inventory. Kane knew because he'd done the same thing before. It was a habit that came from long training.
I've got a processing station set up down in Mexico. They had an abundance of petroleum products the U.S. wouldn't buy before Skydark. My father had maps that detailed some of the storage spaces. Many of them survived. We found personnel and equipment and set it up as we started enlarging. I sell the overflow to Kang and some of the other vills. It keeps me in their good graces because getting a navy together to make the hulls would be expensive. And those fuels can be very dangerous.
It also makes them somewhat dependent on you.
Yes. That's why I knew Kang wouldn't do anything to me. He's protecting his investment.
How soon before we reach the fuel shipment?
15-20 minutes.
I'll be ready.
Kane pulled the polycarbonate armor on down in the crew's quarters. He had his helmet in place. Bridget watched him, her mouth tight.
Participating in this isn't what we agreed to do.
Kane locked his chest plate into place, then reached for the leggings. He looked at Bridget, letting her know he was talking to her.
What do you propose to do, Baptiste? Watch?
It's not our fight.
I'm sure the Raiders' bullets will know that and understand.
We're not in control of this thing, Kane. Don't you see that? We've gone well past what we'd agreed to accomplish.
You want to make a decision on what we've seen so far?
Yes, I do. We don't need her.
Hell, Baptiste. She's got an army, a navy, an armored division, and supplies to keep it all moving. Cerberus is years away from that.
But it's in the direction of her agenda, not ours.
What the fuck is ours? Do you think for a minute that Lakesh had opened up his whole treasure trove of secrets and plans? He's a bigger manipulator than Ambika. At least she comes at you straight on. You get a chance to see what you're dealing with.
You're not seeing it all, Kane. You're seeing what you want to, what she wants you to, and what you understand.
That goes for most people, don't you think?
You brought me along to give you feedback on what I thought of her. Or don't you remember that?
I remember.
Kane locked his leg guards in place and pulled his gloves on last. As he'd donned the armor, he'd felt the old mag certainty settle in on him. He was right in what he was doing. No other course was the one they needed to choose.
I listened, and I disagreed.
Big surprise.
You're operating out of your own feelings. You don't like her, and you don't like the way she does things. Well, sometimes, Baptiste, they're the only way to get things done.
According to you.
According to history, according to the kind of world we're in now. The Barons, no matter how outnumbered they may be, aren't going to give up their vills. They'll dig in, sacrifice every life they can to prevent anyone from throwing them out of power.
And you'll take every life they offer up?
To make it better for everyone else? Yeah, Baptiste, I will. Because I believe it has to be done. In order for a garden to grow, you have to pull the weeds. You can't talk them into going away.
You've got a narrow view of life.
It's a narrow life.
The sound of gunfire topside drew Kane's attention. Without another word, he brushed by Bridget and clambered up the ladder. Seven Raider ships engaged three refurbished small tanker ships less than 300 yards out from the flagship. Kane took in the scene at a glance, then raced forward to join Ambika on the prow deck. The tankers moved much more slowly than the raiders. They were short and wide-bodied, and sailing north as they pushed against the wind. The seven raiders worked with the wind, moving rapidly around as they fired their cannon. Ambika stood tall on the prow deck. She wore a helmet now that covered her head, but left her face exposed. She held a huge 454 Kasul in her hand.
Ready starboard cannon!
Ready starboard cannon! Aye!
The crew members hastened to their posts like a well-oiled machine.
Helmsman, take us straight in toward Conister's ship. One volley with the cannon, then stand by to board. Grapples ready!
Kane watched in fascination as the flagship bore down on the raider. The men on the decks of the raider vessel hurried to meet the new challenge, wheeling the big cannon over to port side. Gunfire cracked, and bullets sang through the rigging and the sails around Kane. The gunners didn't have the range yet, but they would. The raider's cannon opened up, but most of the balls went well over the approaching flagship and into the water. Kane drew the copperhead from his shoulder and held it at the ready. He glanced down to the main decks and saw men running forward with planks. Others stood at the railing with grappling hooks attached to lines.
Fire!
The vibration of the cannon recoil, fighting the flagship's forward momentum, ran through Kane. The machine guns on the flagship's stern and prow decks raked the other ship, chewing through wood, ropes, sails, and flesh. Men spun like puppets with their strings suddenly cut. Sail billowed and flapped as rigging was torn free and great holes opened up in the cloth.
Grapple!
The grapples sailed across the 10-yard distance, locking onto the other ship's railing. Some of the grappling lines pulled railing sections free and dragged men into the sea, but the other lines held. The flagship's greater bulk manhandled the raider ship, heeling it over in the water. Then the helmsman, aided by the men running the sail, brought the flagship into the raider's side. The grappling hook teams tied the ships fast, holding on to their catch. Gunfire from both sides sent men flailing to the decks and to the water. Blood ran rich against the grain of the wood, creating hazards for footing. Then the boarding planks were thrown across. Ambika leaped from the prow, landing on the deck below. She ripped the sword free of her back sheath with her left hand and fired the Kasul with her right.
Board! Board!
She led the charge onto the nearest boarding plank. Kane ran at her heels, surprised by the woman's aggressiveness. He leaped onto the plank after her, the copperhead in both hands. He fired short bursts, running the limited ammo magazine dry and then reloaded. Ambika fired the Kasul in the face of the man who met her charge on the other side of the boarding plank with a pitchfork. The huge 454 round caught him and flipped him backward, throwing him into two men behind him. The warrior woman turned to her right and fired into the knot of men trying to shove the second boarding plank from their vessel. She showed no sign at all of struggling with the immense recoil. One of the men, still alive, raised a gun at her. She moved mercilessly, swinging the big sword in a glistening arc. The heavy blade cleaved his skull. Kane smiled in appreciation of the move. Then he was kept busy with his own part of the battle. The raiders put up a desperate fight. Kane popped the Sin Eater free of its holster. He wasn't sure where to go, so he stayed with Ambika, protecting her flank. Ambika didn't need much protection. She was a whirlwind of death and destruction with the sword. Traveling behind her, blasting anyone not wearing the familiar blue and white of Ambika's crew, Kane stepped over slashed bodies of the dead and dying. It was raw carnage, the like of which even Kane had seldom seen. And the whole time, a blood-spattered smile stayed on Ambika's face. Kane relished her in that moment, felt the fires of passion stirring within him. The raider captain moved out of the crowd suddenly, using Ambika to throw off Kane's field of fire.
Look out!
The captain dodged under Ambika's sword, and the heavy blade cut deeply into the chest of the man behind him. Seeing Ambika unable to retrieve her weapon quickly enough, the captain attacked her, plunging a knife into her ribs under the Kevlar bustier. Crimson spurted suddenly, and Kane saw the white gleam of bone within the wound. Kane brought the Sin Eater up, but Ambika freed her sword and then stepped into his way. Before the captain could jump back or strike again, she swept the sword around in a horizontal arc. The blade sliced through the man's neck just below his jaw, sending the head tumbling. Kane fired twice more, killing the raiders around them. He reloaded the Sin Eater as he moved to Ambika. The battle raged around them, but it was in its last moments. The few raiders that still survived were trying to give up, but Ambika's crew slaughtered them where they stood. The same events were being played out on all the other raider ships. There weren't going to be any survivors, not intentionally. Kane glanced at Ambika and saw the knife sticking out from her ribs. It was buried to the hilt, and he guessed that the blade was at least 7 or 8 inches long. Without proper medical care, he judged she was going to die maybe in minutes. He put his hand under her arm, thinking maybe she was in shock and didn't know how badly she'd been injured. He silently cursed her foolhardiness in wearing the abbreviated armor. She should have been wearing a full bodysuit if she was going to fight like that.
I've got my own doctors, if I need one.
You need one.
She pushed him away and shook her head.
I told you I'm not like others, Kane.
She grasped the hilt of the knife. Her knuckles whitened as she started to pull it out.
Oh!
Don't! That blade could be the only thing keeping you from bleeding to death.
I won't bleed to death.
Ambika kept pulling, bringing the razor-edged blade from between her ribs. Blood spread down her side, running over her armor. Incredibly, the blade came free. Kane expected a rush of blood and was prepared to try to put pressure on it. He watched her standing there, certain she was about to fall over or pass out at any moment. She smiled at him, crimson staining her lips.
This didn't even go through, Kane. It's nothing.
She threw the blade down on the deck and calmly reloaded the Kasul. Then she reached over and grabbed the back of his helmet, pulling his face to hers. She kissed him, hard and deep, her tongue sliding between his lips, salty with her own blood. Instinctively, his passion soaring, Kane kissed back. When she finally let him go, he was breathless.
Let's go.
She turned to go, and Kane followed her, amazed. Even as he watched, the blood flow was shutting down. She looked imperiously at her people.
No survivors! None! Chill every one of these stoop bastards and throw them overboard for the sharks!
And she joined her men, using the sword to kill any of the raiders that remained alive. Kane stayed out of it. A battle was one thing, but he didn't feel like joining in the scorched earth policy Ambika insisted on.
Why aren't you over there helping?
Kane glanced over at Bridget. Her face was smeared with the blood of others too, telling him she'd also joined in the fight.
I don't think what she's doing is right, but it's not my call. These aren't my enemies.
They should be, if you're so intent on joining up with her.
Her words carried a double meaning, and he knew she'd seen the kiss Ambika had given him. Her eyes showed hurt and anger, and she was moving away from him before he had a chance to think of anything to say. There was no excuse. He'd willingly returned the kiss, and only now regretted it a little. Bridget was right about one thing, though. If they did join up with Ambika, her enemies would be his enemies. But he didn't join in the bloodletting. After the last raider had been executed, Ambika salvaged 6 of the 7 raider ships. One of the raider ships had been too badly damaged in the steering section to make hauling it back to her island worthwhile. They'd left it behind, but not without marking the territory and the battle that had been fought there. Kane watched the abandoned ship for a time as they sailed away. Corpses from all the ships had been positioned in the vessel's rigging, hanging there by broken and twisted limbs. Still others dangled from nooses slung around the yardarms of the masts. With the trade in the area, some ships would see it, and the story would be told. Even Wei Qiang's airwags stayed around for the final display. They had to land on their pontoons and take fuel from Ambika to make the return flight.
Woman leaves a hell of a calling card, doesn't she?
Grant stood beside Kane in the flagship's stern. After the battle, Bridget had decided to join Domi, and there was no confusion about why.
Yeah, it's meant to carry a message.
She seemed to take a lot of pleasure in it. Reminds me of some of the MAG commanders we both knew.
Kane scowled at the mention of those men. In the Magistrate Division, some of the commanders specialized in shooting people in the back. They got their promotions, but they didn't get much respect. They were also the ones who often demonstrated sadistic tendencies.
Maybe she was just glad to be alive.
Maybe so.
Do you have something else you want to say?
Nope.
You look like you do.
There are times when you have to work through things for yourself. But you'll get there.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
It means that I'm wondering about Ambika's pleasure in chilling those raiders and setting that twisted hell afloat. I saw your face when she was ordering it done. It didn't look like you enjoyed it much.
We'll be at the Isles of the Lioness by nightfall. We'll see more of what Ambika's about then.
I'll be waiting for that, but not nearly as faint of heart as I was before. Well, I think I'm gonna find something to chew on. You seem to have enough on your plate.
Grant gave him an opaque look and sauntered off, leaving Kane by the railing. Kane looked back out on the water, his thoughts in disarray. Earlier, Ambika had gone to her private quarters. Kane had watched her go and didn't say anything. Christensen's ship had remained within visual range of the flagship, and he'd noticed Bridget on deck. He knew part of the reason she was out there was to watch him. He thought about the kiss Ambika had given him. Her lips had seared his, and it had made him remember how long it was since he'd had a woman. But he remembered Bridget's kiss, too. It had been on a New Year's Eve that never existed in the world he knew. He thought about the memories he shared with Bridget, of other times and other places, and he wondered again what all that meant.
Anam Kara.
The term echoed in his head, but the heat of Ambika's kiss felt nearer. Cursing himself because he was more confused than he felt any reason for, he turned from the railing, went below, and approached Ambika's quarters. Except for the gloves, he hadn't bothered to remove the polycarbonate armor, and he was sweltering underneath. But at the moment, he didn't feel much like taking it off. It would leave him too open, too vulnerable.
Come in.
The room was dim, lit only by a swaying lantern that hung from a rafter over the ceiling. The room was huge. A large bed occupied the back wall. At the center of the wall was a window that looked over the white churning foam following the flagship. Ambika's armor lay strewed at the bottom of an armoire bolted to the floor. A vanity sat to the left, the large oval mirror catching the light from the lantern. Ambika sat in a claw-footed wooden bath in the middle of the room. The water was warm enough that it still steamed, and it did little to cover her nakedness. Her hair tumbled down around her shoulders, glinting with the lantern light.
Sorry, I'll come back later.
Kane, there's no reason to leave. Unless you're embarrassed.
No, I'm not embarrassed.
I didn't think you would be. Was there something you wanted?
I just wanted to make sure you were okay. I never saw a doctor come in after you.
Actually, it had crossed Kane's mind that she'd walked into the room and passed out, maybe even died from the wound. He glanced at the water, then realized it wasn't blood-smeared as he thought it would be. Her wound should have still been bleeding, and the water should have been pulling it out.
Well, that's thoughtful of you, but there was no need.
That was a bad wound.
It's already gone.
Effortlessly, she stood, and the water sluiced down her body, tracing every generous curve. Standing in the tub, she was taller than Kane, a work of feminine flesh done in Amazonian proportions. Her breasts were full and firm. Water droplets clung to her skin like jewels. The fleece of her pubic triangle was just as silver as the hair on her head. It took Kane a moment to remember he was looking for the wound in her side. Amazingly, the wound had already closed and appeared to have been healing for a week or more. The flesh was pink, supple, and pulled together neatly.
That can't be.
But it is. Come here.
She ran her fingertips over her side, touching the place where the wound had been.
Feel.
She took his hand in hers, then ran it over the flesh. Kane felt the heat of her, the taut muscles that had re-knitted under the soft layer of flesh. He stood, hypnotized by the touch and amazed by the wound's quick healing. She maintained her hold on his hand, pulling it down to the silver fringe between her thighs.
Kane, I've been thinking about you.
She kept his fingers trapped there. He felt the power of her grip, the sleekness of the soft flesh just beyond his touch. His pulse throbbed at his temples and in his groin.
I was lying here in my bath, remembering the way you covered my back when we took that ship. It was like you'd been doing it for years. I can't believe how comfortable it felt for you to be there. No man has ever made me feel this way before. You've been thinking about me, too. I can tell.
She pulled his hand closer, allowing his fingertips to touch the molten heat between her thighs. It was all Kane could do to keep from lifting her and forcing her to the bed.
You know this is meant to be. You must feel it as strongly as I do. Take me, Kane.
She pulled him in close to her and kissed him with bruising force. The image of Bridget came into Kane's mind, even though his senses were swimming. He tasted Ambika's breath, fresh with the flavor of mint or another spice, but it was Bridget he thought of.
Anam Kara.
Kane heard the word again in his mind. He turned his head away from Ambika, then took back his hand as well.
What's wrong?
This.
You don't want me?
Hell, Ambika. You can look at me and know that isn't true.
She glanced at the front of his crotch and knew he was telling the truth.
It's the woman, isn't it? Bridget Baptiste?
Baptiste doesn't have anything to do with this.
We would be good together, Kane. It would be so good.
It would be. but I'm not ready for something like this.
We could be more than allies. You came here to find me, and to get me to join with your group, but we could be more than that.
Kane looked at her, torn between desire and the memory that haunted him.
She is your Anamkara.
I know it.
Then what's holding you back?
Something in the past.
And let it stay in the past. You and I are here now. This is a chance you won't get again.
I just came in here to see if you were all right.
Take me now!
I'm sorry.
Ugh.
She sank back into the bathwater, wrapping her arms around her knees.
All right, Kane. You've seen that I'm all right, and you've seen a lot more than that. You may go.
Dismissed, Kane walked back through the door, closing it behind him. He found some measure of solace in the chill, brine wind that wrapped around him. He cursed himself for not knowing what to do. There was no way to handle the situation with either of the women that had stepped into his life.
Something on your mind?
Kane looked up at Grant, who lounged at the nearby railing, smoking a cigar. He knew Grant had seen him enter Ambika's quarters.
Don't even ask.
Sunset dappled the western sky when Ambika's flotilla reached the outer islands of her empire. Kane stood in the prow with Grant, studying the towering rock that jutted up from the sea. He saw the gun emplacements on the island they sailed by and watched as the first mate waved a blue and white flag in quick movements. They had the radio hookup as well, but Kane guessed the flags were the secondary system and would be hard for imitators to duplicate. Besides the rough, craggy surface of the standing rock, some remains of buildings could also be seen. But some of the ruined brick and mortar had been used to construct the garrison. Uneven walls ran around the perimeter and were topped with gleaming bits of glass and metal that would hold off most attackers who'd try to simply climb over. Even as they passed the outer island, the main island came into view. The flagship sailors ignored the sight of the fortress area, but Kane and Grant pressed forward.
Damn.
The view of the main island was staggering. It wasn't just one island, as he'd seen on Christensen's map. The cartographer had been lazy, or had never been to the island. Even staring at it from out at sea, Kane saw that it was a series of huge promontories that broke the Pacific Ocean's surface. In many places, bare rock showed through the green haze of the sea, given relief only by the white-capped curlers that slammed at the barren beaches. In the heart of the islands, verdant growth covered the high, irregular hills, broken only by the buildings and walls of the keep. Some of the buildings were new. Kane could tell them from the others by the way they stood. The newer buildings stood straight, while the older ones leaned in different directions. A surprising number of them remained whole, showing signs of repair rather than decay.
We tried to salvage as many of the old buildings as we could.
Kane glanced over his shoulder at Ambika as she came to a halt behind him. She wore the blue Kevlar armor again, and her face was impassive, revealing nothing that had gone on between them earlier.
When I first moved my people here, my father was still alive. Once we made sure the vault protecting the Mattrans gateway was intact, we set about building permanent dwellings.
Looking at all the work that had been done, Kane knew it had taken considerable manpower. He guessed the buildings could accommodate at least a couple thousand people, and probably more lived there.
That's a big achievement.
It had to be done. We had to have a permanent place to work from, and we had to be able to defend it. During the first couple of years, raiders succeeded in driving us from the islands three times. Twice, they stayed until they made certain there wasn't anything worthwhile for them to take.
And the third time?
We waited till they settled in for the night, till almost morning. Then we attacked. We chilled raiders until there weren't any left. I ordered all the bodies placed in a common grave near this edge of the island, knowing it was going to be the one most often approached. We left the corpses to the animals in the sea. The waves created tidal pools in the bottom of the grave. A number of hungry bottom feeders were trapped there. They didn't go hungry. Nothing on that island that could fly, walk, or swim did.
Kane felt a chill pass through him. Not from the story. He'd heard worse, and arguably done worse in his time, but from the callous smile that twisted her lips, which was devoid of any warmth.
A month after the feeding frenzy took place, I took my people back down to the grave. We harvested the skeletons of every man, woman, and child that had been with the raiders. Then we built the Bridge of Bones. We never had to worry too much about the raiders coming onto the island again. Look, there it is.
The flagship was within 20 feet of the shore, and the Bridge of Bones was clearly visible.
God damn.
Kane raked the bridge on the shoreline before them with his gaze. It was 6 feet wide and 40 feet long, created entirely of interlaced yellowing bones wired together. The floor was 8 inches thick. Posts, created from bundles of leg bones and arm bones wrapped with barbed wire, stood at least 8 feet tall, every 10 feet on both sides. Skulls sat on top of the poles and on top of the fence line. All of them faced toward the front of the bridge.
How many people did you have to chill to make this?
All of them. We took their ships and left them nowhere to run. Then we tracked them down in groups and finally one at a time. It took most of a week. For a while, there was a rumor that we were cannibals.
The skin across the back of Kane's neck tightened at the thought. He'd seen it among muties and outlanders, and sometimes among the most desperate of the dregs, but he'd never gotten used to the thought. The flagship led the way toward what looked like a solid wall, another hollow-projected entrance, Kane figured. They passed through the wall effortlessly. Electric lighting illuminated the huge cavern on the other side of the fake wall. Bats fluttered along the ceiling, 40 feet above them.
No one knows this way. I don't allow anyone to leave the islands unless I'm sure of their loyalty. We've had children born into the community now, and our population still continues to grow.
A little farther on, Kane spotted sandcats and other wags sitting on flat places on either side of the water that cut through the cavern. Motor pools had been set up, and work was already being done on several of the vehicles. The other ships carrying wags and sandcats dropped anchor at the vehicle bays. The flagship and four others continued on, trailed by Christensen's ship. The cavern took a bend, then another cave mouth opened up before the flagship. It plunged through into the bowl-shaped area inside the conglomeration of islands and buildings. The sky overhead burned with the setting sun. Kane looked around the towering buildings surrounding them. They were tall and crooked, but all of them showed evidence of habitation. Clothing hung out windows on lines. Children played at the foot of the buildings that were above the waterline. Other children played on stairways that had been added to the outside of the buildings mired in the water. Docks fronted the buildings on all sides, and small craft were tied up at them. Well above the flagship, above the masts and sails, catwalks made of rope and wooden slats crisscrossed the area. People walked along them, going about their daily business in the ville. The buildings on the center island weren't connected to the other buildings. The only way into them was through a well-guarded main entrance, followed by other guard posts leading to each structure. No buildings had windows lower than 30 feet from the ground. The buildings looked rounded on the top, like tall mushrooms.
We built the administrative buildings taller than the surrounding hills. Occasionally over the past several decades, the Pacific Ocean has been known to rise for unknown reasons. It hasn't in almost 30 years now. But I wanted to make sure our command posts weren't lost. No rooms or offices exist in the bottom floors, in case we're flooded. Protected by the rocks as we are here, I don't think there'll ever be enough of a current to rip them free of the seafloor.
What do the people do?
My people help shape their own destiny by following the edicts I lay down. They fish to help provide meals, and they salvage so that we continue to grow and have goods to trade with other islands that have things we need or want.
The gasoline you're getting out of Mexico must really give you a leg up on the local competition.
In the end, it's my control over that gasoline plant that scares even Wei Kang. He knows I'd see it burned and destroyed before I'd allow him to take it from me.
What about the ore you're taking out of the Utah territories? What are you doing with that?
Building. I've started a munitions factory in that second tower. In there is the machinery to make simple, single-shot rifles. Granted, they're not very useful against an assault rifle, but they beat the hell out of a bow and arrow. It allows me to field more troops. If three people are shooting at a man carrying an assault rifle, there's a chance that one or two of them will survive long enough to chill that man.
Kane looked at the building. Lakesh would appreciate the effort Ambika was putting into her plans, but he knew Bridget would stand against them. Ambika was talking of starting a blood tide with her simple weapons, an overpowering surge that would change the face of any territory she involved herself with. She'd already changed the Western Isles. He found her aqua gaze compelling his own.
Most people are desperate, Kane. There are people, like the ones I've found, who are waiting for a leader strong enough and brave enough to lead them out of the pitiful existences they have into a brighter day.
Kane didn't say anything. He knew that wasn't true of all the outlanders and dregs. Some of those preferred to live their own lives.
They would follow you, Kane.
Where would I lead them?
Anywhere you wanted to.
That answer scared the hell out of Kane. Bridget clambered over the side of the sloop John B. and dropped to the dock at the bottom of the main island. Grant and Kane waited there, gazing around in a mixture of fascination and unease. Bridget knew the feeling. It was one thing to be on Ambika's ships, but another to be surrounded by the Empire she ruled with an iron fist. Bridget kept the Uzi subgun she carried on a sling at her side. She also kept her distance from Kane. Anger still burned within her because he'd made noise about bringing her along to get her opinion, then totally disregarded her advice. The kiss she'd seen Ambika give him hadn't helped either. Domi leaped from Christensen's ship and landed lithely at Bridget's side.
Big place, huh?
Yes.
Something wrong?
No, why should anything be wrong? We've just walked into the Queen Spider's web.
You don't like her much.
No.
Me neither.
Bridget glanced at her, surprised Domi hadn't said anything about how she felt about the situation while they'd been on the sloop John B.
Why?
Dead raiders. No reason for that. Chill during fight, maybe, but not that. Too much like a baron.
Bridget glanced around, noting how close Ambika stayed to Kane.
Too much like a baron.
As she watched Kane and the warrior woman, she noticed the way they reacted to each other, maintaining space between them. She couldn't help wondering what had caused that. She also grew frustrated with herself when she couldn't get it out of her mind. Bridget and Domi hurried slightly to catch up. Once Ambika had her personal entourage together, packed down the crates and boxes she'd evidently bartered for in Autarkic, she continued along the floating dock. Guards stood at regular intervals. The dock wound into the stone hillside, then to a chamber that had been carved out. At the end of the cave tunnel, Ambika pressed her palm against a metal plate. A door opened in the stone, so seamlessly put together that Bridget hadn't expected it there. The interior held a makeshift elevator cage that swayed a little when Ambika stepped on it. Only 10 people fit onto it. Bridget hung back enough that she didn't go in the cage that took Kane and Ambika up first. Grant also hung back, but Bridget got the feeling it was to stay with her and Domi to make sure they were okay. It irritated her that Kane hadn't thought to do the same thing. The cage returned, creaking along its cables a few minutes later. Bridget entered, followed by Grant and Domi, packing in close to one corner. The Sekhmen who joined them carried kits containing goods they'd robbed from the raiders and maybe from other excursions. The elevator creaked along its way as two of the men pulled on the rope in the center of the cage. Weights counterbalanced it, making it easy to pull upward even with the extra weight. At the top, the elevator opened at a small alcove lighted by torches that promised some aspects of elegance. Bridget followed the Sekhmen out of the alcove into the hallway proper beyond. There was no sign of Kane or Ambika. She continued following the Sekhmen down the corridor, but she kept the Uzi subgun close at hand. The hallway ran long and clean, totally devoid of features, except for the coded doors on either side. None of them were open. At the end of the hallway was a final checkpoint, with two secure cages built into either side of the wall. Sekhmen stood behind light blue-tinted armor glass running from floor to ceiling that had cross-shaped gun ports cut into them. Heavily armored double doors blocked the way. One of the Sekhmen operated a camera with a toggle box on the wall. The camera swung around, locking onto Bridget and the others. A moment later, the doors opened. The pneumatic hiss let Bridget know the place was airtight as well. Where the opulence and grandeur the archivist had expected in the building hadn't been apparent in the hallway, the room they next entered more than made up for it. The room sprawled gigantically, bigger even than the caverns in the Cerberus Redoubt. A hydroponics garden grew in the center of the room, filled with flowering bushes, trees, and plants that obscured the other side of the room. It also led the eye naturally to the raised dais with an immense high-backed chair that could be considered nothing less than a throne. The chair was thick and sculpted of silver-gray stone, inlaid with bright gold thread. Silver satin cushions softened the seat and the high sides. 6 steps led up to the chair, putting whoever sat there higher than anyone else in the room, guaranteeing the center of attention.
"Takes herself seriously, doesn't she?"
Grant glanced upward. Bridget followed his line of sight, spotting the armor glass sections near the top of all 4 walls. Through the subtle blue tint, she saw shadows moving on the other side.
"Take security serious, too. Maybe has to."
"Yeah, and that kind of troubles me."
Spotting Kane and Ambika talking at the foot of the chair, Bridget glanced at Grant.
"That's the kind of sect defenses you and Kane should appreciate."
"Don't make any mistakes here. This shit isn't getting by, Kane. So keep your mind on the reason we're here and don't confuse the issue."
An angry retort died at Bridget's lips as she regained control at the last second. She turned away from Grant without saying a word, then fell into step with him as they walked toward Kane. She spotted more Sec men around the hydroponics garden and the outer walls of the room. As her anger died away, wariness settled in when she realized how vulnerable they were inside the fortress. Ambika acted relaxed and totally at home, but Bridget noted that Kane looked edgy. Most people would have missed it because of the arrogance of the mag demeanor he displayed. She felt calmer for the awareness.
Few people have ever seen the rooms you're going to be seeing, Kane. This is my inner sanctum. No one comes here unless I've invited them.
Glancing back, Bridget noted that Christensen and his crew hadn't followed them up in the elevator.
Where's Christensen?
Down in the lower quarters. There are guest rooms there as well, though not nearly of the caliber you'll be seeing.
She turned her attention back to Kane, her eyes warming noticeably.
I had this structure built to my father's specifications.
It's large.
There are smaller rooms that provide more privacy, if you want.
Kane remained noncommittal, but Bridget felt the comment was directed more at her anyway. The archivist kept her face free of emotion, returning the cool azure stare of the taller woman.
Let me get you settled in. Then perhaps we can talk more.
The room to which Kane was shown was actually a suite of three interconnecting rooms that contained a large bedroom, a small kitchen, and a spacious living room. He assumed that Grant, Domi, and Bridget had been shown to similar quarters, but he didn't know for sure. Ambika had shown him his quarters personally, while Sekmen guided the others.
Are these quarters going to be suitable?
As before, she kept her distance from him, never letting her personal space overlap his. Kane had noted the difference, and women scorned weren't to be ignored.
I've never been in anything like this before. I've seen some ornate rooms in the Baron's quarters, but never had rooms like this for myself.
Some of the tension left her face, and she smiled at him warmly.
Good. I'm glad I'm able to give you something you've never had before.
Kane stepped to the window. He noted that armaglass filled the pane, thick enough to offer proof against bullets and probably low-gain incendiaries. Dusk straddled the Pacific Ocean, drenching the western skies in nuclear oranges and deep jet-laced ochres and royal plums. He gazed at the other buildings, noting that most of them appeared to be lit by oil-burning lanterns and candles.
The other people here don't live as well. How many people live in this building?
My support staff and personal set crews. Essential personnel.
Not a lot.
You sound as though you're finding fault with me.
Not exactly. I know that true equality is never going to exist. There are always those who are more equal than others. Otherwise, there would never be those who can and will lead.
Yes, you do understand. So why do you bring this up?
Because I know someone who would never accept any bargain that didn't offer equality. And he'd want more equality than the next guy.
He sounds like a hard man to deal with.
Make no mistake, when he has all the cards, he is a hard man to deal with.
You work for him?
Only as far as I want to.
Join me, Kane. And you'll have a position of respect and authority. You're not the kind of man who should walk in another's shadow.
That'd just be trading one shadow for another.
Perhaps, but I can promise you that you'd be walking much bigger in my shadow than in his, from what I hear.
What are you after, Ambika?
With you, Kane? I thought that was obvious.
It is. I mean with this whole operation.
Do you really want to know?
Kane stared back at her, suddenly feeling he was standing on the edge of a precipice.
Yes, I really do.
Then I'll tell you, Kane. Because I want you to see what I'm capable of.